You can listen to The Professional Left wherever you get your podcasts, on Netroots Radio, or at our website, proleftpod.com, where you can also contribute to this podcast. There is a PayPal button at our website. Or you can mail us a letter and or contribution at P.O. Box 9133, Springfield, Illinois, 62791.
This is the podcast for the week of October 20th, 2023. It's Not Safe for Work.
Recorded live from the Cornfield Resistance, where it's the Great Convergence, Charlie Brown. It's the Professional Left with Driftglass and Blue Gal. Hey, Blue Gal.
Hi.
How you doing? You know this. This is going to be a rare one-day early midweek hybrid podcast. There's going to be a little bit of No Fair Remembering stuff and a little bit of regular weekly stuff because this week is the week of the Great Convergence.
And I did a little minute and a half podcast yesterday without you, Driftglass. I'm so sorry. You were taking Barack Hussein, the Kenyan usurper, to the vet.
Yeah.
And I realized we'd better tell people that we're not doing a show on Tuesday. So that's what I did.
Oh, that's true.
Explained
okay.
What was going on. But yes, from the four corners of the earth, all three kids, all of our adult children.
Yeah.
I can't believe I survived empty nest syndrome. And now they're all coming back.
Yeah.
They're converging on our house. And because of schedules and fall breaks being at different times, there's only going to be one day when all three kids are going to be in the house.
Yes.
And that's tomorrow, Thursday. Yeah. And I thought, as I said on the little podcast yesterday, you know, it might make them feel right at home to say, shut up, we're podcasting. But I decided it's only one day they're all going to be here. I wasn't going to do that. And Junior Dude is turning 25 this weekend. So I am not old enough to have a 25-year-old, but apparently I am. And so we're going to celebrate that tomorrow and, you know, have our regular Thai food feast and order out. And middle child made vegan cheesecake. So we've got that going on.
By made vegan cheesecake, she made me go to Food Fantasy.
She made you go get a vegan cheesecake, and she's going to cook some frozen strawberries to put on top, I think.
Yes.
Make a sauce.
It's a ritual. It's a tradition.
Yeah.
And we remember things by ritualizing and traditionalizing.
We do. And I think it's so fun that Junior Dude is flying back from Washington State to have his birthday back home.
Yeah.
With the cats. Let's face it.
Yeah, let's face it. We will be they'll be breezing past us to see what's up with the cats. And what have you done with my boys?
All three cats now have had their checkups. Bosco is diabetic. I've just been in and out of the doctor's office like crazy. But I'm feeling good. So this is great.
Feeling better.
All the treatments, things are better, much better. They're all going to be here. And so we're just doing one podcast this week. And so let's go for it, Driftglass.
Take it away. Blue Gal, a little story about Christmas and David Gregory.
Okay? Christmas and David Gregory. Okay.
Everyone put your goddamn pumpkin spice nonsense down. Pick up
I'm already getting Christmas flyers in the mail. It's disgusting.
Well, that's why you put your pumpkin spice down. You pick your eggnog up.
Oh.
You start a little fire. You get your cozy socks on. Mm-hmm. You curl up by the fire and let your old Uncle Driftglass tell you a Christmas story about the olden days. Ready, everybody? Once upon a time. Okay. To precede this little story, I'm going to make an analogy. And the analogy is this. The hosting gig on Meet the Press is like the Santa suit that department stores used to keep in storage. Maybe they still do for the Christmas season. In fact, and here's where the story begins. So everybody get cozy. When I was 17 years old, I played Santa at the Sears store where I worked as a stock boy. Now, being a stock boy at Sears when you're 17 at that place at that time was, in a lot of ways, one of the best jobs I have ever had. I got to hang out in the warehouse with all kinds of different guys, old guys, young guys, black guys, Hispanic guys. We just hung out. We had a ball. Some of them were in their 40s, 50s, and 60s. One guy was only there because he was a parole officer and was working there for gas money, and you couldn't tell him to do anything. But it was a blast. I met a whole bunch of kinds of different people. My boss was an older gentleman who had fallen from grace from A&P. Apparently, he had a big job with A&P, and got in trouble there and fell out of that job into this job. And he was great because as long as we did what we were supposed to do, he kept management off our asses. And that was a blessing. We got high in the back. We had pallet truck races in the hallways, which was a blast. A bigger blast was disposing of discontinued toilets by dropping them down this three-story garbage chute into what was called the bailing room, where they exploded. And that was awesome. The bailing room was where all the garbage was baled up into big piles, and we knew how to work that machine too. But we always got the work done. That's the point. And one day in December, when the regular Santa guy was sick and the backup Santa guy was sick, I was drafted into the role of St. Nicholas for the children. And I was not and am not built like Santa Claus at all. At the time, I was my full height that I am now, 6'8", and I weighed about, if I'm stretching it, 140 pounds, maybe.
Yeah, you were a string bean back then. I've
seen
pictures.
I was skinny as hell, tall as hell, and the suit was old, and it smelled bad. It was musty, and didn't even come close to fitting me. The fake beard, the acrylic beard, was scratchy, and it fell off all the time. And I tell you, my fellow stock boys fell out when they saw me in it. I was the source of much amusement among my peers. But here's the thing. They needed someone to wear the suit and play the role, so I did. I had little kids on my lap. Mothers waiting anxiously and snapping pictures of me, the whole deal. My mom came down and took a picture of me.
I'll bet you were a really good Santa.
I was a great Santa. I was not the Santa you expected, but they were the Santa they needed and wanted right then.
Right then,
And I did fine. I put the kids on my lap. They told me what they wanted. I looked at mom. I looked around. I said, oh, yeah, don't worry about it. And, you know, it was fine. It was great. Went on for a couple of days. Now, here's the analogy. The job of hosting Meet the Press is exactly the same. Whatever job you were doing before, when you're hired to host Meet the Press, you put on the goddamn suit and you play the part they tell you to play. Doesn't matter how ill-fitting it is or how ridiculous it is, because long ago, all Sunday shows became the same Sunday show. And they all perform the same secular Beltway ritual, which might be why individual hosts and shows kind of started to become indistinguishable from one another over time. You know, just this kind of this monotonous blur of gray tapioca, both siderism year after year after year. And maybe that's why so many people spent so much energy drunk on nostalgia for good old Tim Russert and lamenting that Chuck Todd had destroyed Russert's legacy and just ruined Meet the Press.
Yeah, but that's nonsense, and it's very ahistorical.
Yes, it is.
Tim Russert, first of all, he was no prize.
No.
If you're a media and politics nerd like we are, you no doubt remember that Meet the Press under Tim Russert was Dick Cheney's favorite venue for lying us into the Iraq War. This is from Linda Hirschman in The Nation magazine, June 19th, 2008, just a few weeks after Tim Russert died.
Mm-hmm.
Quote, "You'll pardon me if I don't jump on the pyre the media is building for Tim Russert, who died of a heart attack on June 13th. Mm-hmm. You'd never know it from the keening all over television, but as Dick Cheney's press aide testified during the Scooter Libby trial, Russert's show was the place the Bushies loved the most for getting their message out, especially during the homicidal and suicidal Iraq War."
Mm-hmm.
"And especially for the vice president, Dick Cheney, who was the architect of the administration's foreign policy. The eulogists are right. Tim Russert was powerful. From calling Florida for Bush in 2000 to telling Al Gore to quit the contest the day after Election Day,
mm-hmm.
to kneecapping Hillary Clinton in the debate in Philadelphia last October in 2007, Russert was a kingmaker. The Russert test was a disaster because it rewarded people willing to lie unabashedly on TV. And we talk about this a lot, that both siderism picks aside the person willing to lie.
Mm-hmm.
They lied, the guests lied, because they could not truthfully defend their positions. But Russert's famed gotcha research couldn't catch them. Much has been said this eulogizing week about Russert's hard-working ways, assembling the material in advance of the show. When someone told a new lie on Meet the Press, such as when Dick Cheney flat out denied he had ever said that intelligence confirmed the Al-Qaeda Iraq link, Meet the Press had no procedure for producing the contrary evidence. This would hardly have been difficult, given Google an earpiece and a producer to do instant research. As it happened, NBC had the rebuttal to Dick Cheney's lies in its own archives.
Mm-hmm.
But it remained for The Daily Show to do the research.
Yeah.
Unquote. Boy, yep. Do we all know why that is.
Yep. I mean, Jon Stewart always said, you know, I'm a comedy show that follows a puppet show on a comedy station on basic cable. The Tower of Integrity, Tim Russert, wouldn't catch people lying on his show and had to have a comedy show do the work for him.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
we were never that big on Tim Russert as the gold standard. Now, the second reason that this is all nonsense is that Chuck Todd didn't replace Russert. And as
yes, let's remember the timeline here.
He didn't replace Russert. As media and politics nerds, which we are, it's very weird to us that so many people think that that's what happened, because it isn't. What actually happened was David Gregory replaced Tim Russert, and he was just terrible from the start, just terrible. Nonstop both-siderisms, frequently stacking his panels and guests 2-1 Republican, rehabilitating the public reputations of just terrible people, and on and on and on and on. Now, ratings dropped so hard that NBC brought in a shrink, a consultant, but it was a shrink, to see if they could fix David Gregory. But Gregory was never the problem. The problem was the smelly Santa suit that NBC executives hired him to wear. The both sides do it, no follow-up questions for Republicans suit. When they couldn't fix Gregory, they fired him and replaced him with Chuck Todd, who put on exactly the same smelly Santa suit Gregory had worn. And during Todd's entire 9-year tenure, he was never less than god-awful. Then a few weeks ago, Todd was allowed to retire, and the smelly Santa suit, the Meet the Press Santa suit, was handed off to Christian Welker, who has been abysmal so far. But what do we all know about these god-awful media clowns, Blue Gal?
We know that there's a club.
Yes, there is.
And we're not in it.
No, we're not. And we never shall be.
Nope. Mm-hmm. And so the same discredited hacks just keep getting recycled over and over again into that Santa suit. I really do love that analogy. It's terrific. But here's the deal, Driftglass. Just this past week, David Gregory bobbed back onto the surface of the media sewer on CNN.
Yes, he did.
With this vintage and studied Gregory observation. And I'm going to play it for you. And I want you to think about the old Driftglass joke of Dick Cheney is caught throwing burning kittens onto homeless veterans. And there's film of it. And everyone can see him doing it. And it's not deep faked. What are the first three words out of David Gregory's mouth? But the Democrats.
But the Democrats.
And just listen to this and see what a studied process. This script has been honed for decades.
Yeah.
And he gets it all out in the, you know, 3 minutes that he's allotted. And this is about Jim Jordan and the House Republicans failing over and over and over again to elect a speaker. And here it is.
I mean, at the end of the week here, with all of this chaos among Republicans, but the much graver circumstances around the world, I actually have my eye on Democrats. How long are Democrats going to stand by in the world of identity politics and zero-sum politics and not be part of any solution? We'll see. I think there's more cards to be played before Democrats jump in. But I think people who don't follow this day in and day out the way we do are looking up and wondering whether Washington has any ability to do their job, to pass bills, to pass legislation, to make sure the government is funded, let alone play a role on the world stage, which is what America is still expected to do.
Now, fortunately, we were not alone in noticing.
No, we were not.
What a horrific answer this is. This caught the attention of a lot of people, including Keith Olbermann. Quote, for you younger folks, before NBC News turned to Chuck Todd and then Kristen Welker, they used to rely on David Gregory as director of both sidesist bullshit on Meet the Press, unquote. Mm-hmm. And I do wonder if Keith says both sidesist instead of both siderist so that we don't sue him.
Oh, I think you're right. I think he's terrified of us. I think he realizes we got here first and we're better.
We're better on this one and newer than he is. We've been at this for a long time.
But I'm not worried. In fact, I predict that I will hear the smelly Santa Claus suit analogy used by Rick Wilson.
Rick Wilson would pick up a smelly Santa Claus suit. Yep.
Back when I was working at Joe McCracken's, I used to wear a smelly Santa Claus suit. And it reminds me of a story.
I used to wear a Santa Claus suit. And you know what? It was a dumpster fire.
Right. It was a big dumpster fire. So, and as I've already mentioned two or three times, we are media and political nerds. We have kept close tabs on the Sunday shows almost every week for going on 19 years now. And based on that very, very long-term perspective, two of the most destructive legacies of Gregory's time on Meet the Press are, first, the nearly weekly platforming of whatever both sides do at Claptrap David Brooks had written that week.
Yeah.
Now, Brooks had already been at the New York Times since 2003, but it was David Gregory's really aggressive promotion of Brooks on the nation's premier Sunday morning political program that elevated Brooks to the apex, to the heavens, the very, very top of the Beltway pundit class, and made Brooks' brand of both-siderism into a virtual state religion in the mainstream media.
Reading David Brooks's column to him and then asking him what he thought.
Yeah. And then when Brooks wasn't there, he's off lecturing on humility or something. He would just read his column and ask everybody else what they thought of it. They all go, oh, man, David Brooks is so wise. You know, he really is both sides. You know, Barack Obama really does need to lead. You know, it's really important that he lead. And it was just like watching. It was horrifying. And we watched it every week. I documented it every week until sometime around Chuck Todd's eighth year. I said, you know what?
You're kind of done. You've said all that you can possibly say.
I'm going to dial back on this a little bit because it's just reruns. It's just the same show over and over again.
Yeah. The second of Gregory's most destructive legacies was the rehabilitation of Newton Leroy Gingrich.
Oh, God. Yeah.
Or rather, the rehabilitation of Newton Leroy. Newton Leroy Gingrich. There we go. By the time Gregory took over the Meet the Press, Gingrich was politically dead.
Yes, he was.
His career had collapsed from Speaker of the House and the architect of the GOP takeover of Congress in 1994-95 to a disgraced failure, serial adulterer, and as Rachel Maddow put it, a direct mail scam artist.
He was selling autographed copies of gavels to people through the mail for money. That's how far he'd fallen.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Then for whatever reason, David Gregory decided to make a personal project out of rehabbing Gingrich's career as a public figure. And by 2009, Newt Gingrich was the most frequent guest on Meet the Press. And I guarantee you it's because he got in the limo to go over to NBC Studios, dressed and combed and ready to speak in sound bites. And so it was easy for the bookers when it was a slow news week or just any time to have a prepped guest who would simply fill the space between, you know, pharmaceutical and, you know, defense contractor advertisements, right?
Yep.
The networks offered this perk to a lot of despicable people. In 2009, the odious Michelle Malkin, who has since all but vanished, had all of her sins forgiven and her hell beast past officially unremembered, courtesy of This Week with George Stephanopoulos, because she had an anti-Obama book out less than 3 months after Obama's inauguration. When did she sign the contract for that book, we wonder?
Yeah.
Having a book in the stores 12 weeks after Inauguration Day.
Yeah.
About how Obama wasn't transparent enough.
Right.
George Stephanopoulos also dispatched the ABC network limo to haul Ann Coulter into the bright redemptive light of big network legitimization.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So these Sunday shows were a marketing ploy for people with books highly likely to be published by the parent corporation of the network where they were appearing.
Yes, they were.
That happened a lot with Ann Coulter.
And I mean, when Stephanopoulos was doing Malkin, Basically, he just gave her the microphone. You could hear him grinding his molars while she talked.
Well, and a lot of people push back on her on the panel.
Yeah.
Because she was saying, no, you know, this was 2009 when everyone was out of work. And she said, well, no one wants to work because of all these welfare Obama's giving out. And people were on the panel saying, there are 260 people in line for four firefighter jobs in Miami. Shut up.
Mm-hmm. But she got her shot. She got her minute.
But she got to pimp her book.
You see, and we learned, you and I, from friends who we have in the industry, that you or I could be on This Week with George Stephanopoulos. It takes is hiring a publicist for a shit ton of money.
$5,000 a month at the time.
$5,000 a month.
Like in 2010, it was $5,000 a month to hire a publicist who would say, well, if you want Michelle Obama on your show one time next year, you got to have these three people in my stable on sometime during the next 10 months.
And, you know, between us, you and I could cobble together a shitty book or two or 20.
And Michelle Malkin's book was just a shitty book of her blog posts from pre-Obama years, updated for President Obama is now a bad person, you know.
Mm-hmm. Anyway, the point being, this sort of thing happened all the time.
Yeah.
But nobody got more thorough and continuous network tongue baths than Newt Gingrich. Mm-hmm. It became such a regular and really completely predictable feature of the Sunday shows that more than a decade ago, I myself, little old me, Driftglass, wrote a short essay called The Gingrich Rules, in which I outlined what the rules of Gingrich are. And I'm going to read you the whole thing now, so strap in.
It's only four paragraphs.
It's only four pages, blue gal.
You were talking this morning to Middle Child, who did get home a day early.
Yeah.
Like, and I said, oh, don't bother him. He's writing the script. And you said, I'm on page 73.
This will require some editing, but I think I'm up to chapter four.
Yeah.
Now, here's my little Gingrich rules thing from a decade ago. Remember, more than a decade ago, this is what I was writing about network television and specifically Gingrich. In the game of professional punditry, there also clearly exists a special set of rules designed with one person in mind, or rather, one sort of person. Conservatism's parade of bomb-throwing, hate-mongering, race-baiting bottom feeders. That breed which makes their daily bread from grifting the pig people by generating an endless flood of books, magazine articles, broadcasts, speeches, and videos, all telling the GOP base over and over again that their bigotries are noble and their paranoia is patriotic. One brief aside, how the hell can you be surprised that Donald Trump became their nominee?
Right.
Back to the article. Of course, part of the downside of wallowing in the wingnut sewer and trafficking in slander and lies is that sooner or later, you become a toxic mess. Your stink becomes unacceptable to the general public, which is where the Sunday morning talk shows come in. Because despite having long ago devolved into a sinkhole of beltway centrist twaddle, it is still viewed by way too many people as a bastion of very serious people. It's the strip mall of political opinion where casual shoppers go to feel smart and validated. And so a bargain is struck. The bottom feeders deliver a temporary hike in the only thing these shows' owners care about, audience share. And in exchange for being TV friendly and keeping the worst of their batshit crazy on a leash for a few minutes, their Sunday shows deburs the bottom feeders' public image, replates and burnishes their credibility, and temporarily transfuses them with seriousness, which can then be redeemed at 10 times its face value back among the pig people. And the key to that bargain is the Gingrich rules, an agreement that the moderator will never, ever ask the bomb-throwing, hate-mongering, race-baiting goon sitting directly across from them a single question about, you know, their bomb-throwing, hate-mongering, or race-baiting activities. Instead, they will be represented to the public merely as a conservative commentator or talk show host or pundit who, at worst, might be known for some controversial opinions, which the moderator will never bother to explain. End quote.
And this has paid off big. In 2016, Gingrich signed on as a Trump whisperer. And for his sins, his six-year mistress slash third wife, you know, 10 Grain calls her blowjob queen number three.
Mm-hmm.
Wife number three. She was made Trump's ambassador to the Vatican. Her dream job.
Uh-huh.
And Newt himself is now a Fox News elder statesman, brought on Hannity.
Mm-hmm.
And his long career of corruption, fascism, and depravity is slowly polished now into a kindly portrait of the man of principle by articles like this one from The Atlantic. And I don't want to scream at you guys, but this article came out this week.
This week.
Yes. Wake.
Damn it.
Newt Gingrich's degraded legacy.
Oh.
Gingrich had a vision of what America ought to be about, but his successors seem dour and unimaginative in their pugnacity. By Philip Wallach. Well, I guess is a summer intern who was kept on through October. I don't know who he is. But I know man, the, and I the know, Atlantic.
I know he's got a byline in the Atlantic. That's what I know about him. Mm-hmm.
Quote, Gingrich brought House Republicans out of 40 years in the political wilderness and into the majority. And he did it by being a prophetic champion of confrontation. From his first congressional race in 1974, all the way through the end of his speakership in 1998. And for some reason, this article doesn't talk about how him having a mistress while he was impeaching Bill Clinton for a Oval Office blowjob. It's not mentioned here. Okay, just the end of his speakership in 1998. Mm-hmm. Also, the post office scandal. Checks at the House post office.
Yeah, he had a whole bunch of ethical problems.
Yeah.
But according
to the Atlantic Monthly, Gingrich was motivated by the belief that confrontation had the power to rescue Americans from their corrupted politics. There was an art, a choreography to this sort of redemptive combativeness, Gingrich thought. When you give them confrontations, you get attention. When you get attention, you can educate. If they could make their case to the American people, Republicans could stop taking breadcrumbs from the Democrats' table and take over the banquet hall themselves and run it better. Unquote. So that's who Newt Gingrich is, according to The Atlantic.
This is I think it's Augustinian just war doctrine, you know, done for, you know, yeah, he was pugnacious and a bomb thrower, but he had a holy mission, Bluegill.
A holy mission.
So
stop taking the crumbs from under Christ's table.
Right. And bring about
and
the
ascend
kingdom
to own the entire banquet.
Mm-hmm. He was trying to bring about the kingdom of heaven on earth.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and all the people who came after him. Did a poorer job. And now they're just a bunch of scrappy assholes like Lauren Boebert. But Newt Gingrich was a man of high principles who thought he was doing right. And how dare you defame him by suggesting that he was just a grubby hawker of garbage online and a liar and a cheat and an adulterer and so forth. Anyway, that's what you get. You get that long-term effect from the mainstream media who keeps pretending that these people are redeemable or have been redeemed or have redeeming qualities when they patently don't and will not follow up and will not do anything about them. And speaking of John Kasich, you know, a noble, thoughtful, redempted, you know, he's conservative, but he's one of the good ones. He also fired up the nation's imagination this week when he appeared on MSNBC in the middle of the GOP Civil War pillow fight, slap fight, and demanded to know, quote, where are the Democrats? They say the Democrats are enjoying watching Republicans struggle. What price are we paying as a country because of that? Unquote.
And here's the good news. Thanks to all of you working hard to make both sides do it a punchline. There was more reaction to Kasich than just you and me, Driftglass.
I know. I was thrilled.
We said fuck you to John Kasich.
I said, yeah, we both said
and
that.
And then you had a thing about a reality show. What was your reality show?
My reality show was I'd like to see a reality show in which a long line of Democrats line up to kick John Kasich in the yam sack while chanting, why won't Steve Scalise stop this?
Why won't Steve Scalise lead and
why
stop
won't Steve
this
Scalise
from happening?
Yeah, as Democrats kick him in the balls over and over and over and over and over again. Because it really, if why not reverse it? It's Republicans' fault that Democrats are lining up to kick John Kasich in the
yam sack. John Kasich in the yam sack. Yeah.
Yep.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Mary L. Trump tweeted, Kasich just went on MSNBC and said it was Democrats' job to help Republicans pick their leader. Zero Republicans voted for Nancy Pelosi for Speaker of the House in 2007, and zero Republicans voted for her in 2021. It would be extremely helpful if the media remembered this. They're not going to remember this, Mary.
No.
That's not their job.
And this is from Charlie Pierce. Quote, Christ almighty, MSNBC, John Kasich. And he inevitably gets around to blaming the Democrats. This is awful, unquote.
Our friend Joan Walsh, quote, get off my television, John Kasich, with blaming the Democrats for this impasse.
Yeah. And Brian Cardone of Twitter makes an important note. I don't know if he's terribly well noticed or if he's famous, but he made this very astute observation. This is so disingenuous from John Kasich. Jim Jordan is on record just a few minutes ago saying, quote, no one in our conference wants to see a coalition government with the Democrats, unquote. Jesus.
Yep. There was another person on Twitter. I can't find it right now, but I did retweet it. Imagining if Joanne Reed had manipulated her coverage and manipulated her staff to be calling into Congress to get Hakeem Jeffries elected speaker. Mm-hmm. And so this brings us to the on-again, off-again love affair between Sean Hannity, who should be fired for what he did this week.
Yeah.
He won't but he should be.
Should be fired for a lot of things, but this week was especially
But the standard on Fox is, you know.
There are no standards.
It's a political operation. Right. However, Sean Hannity's excuse when he got called out for this week was, my staff is just doing investigative journalism. Yeah. So... Sean, you know, Jim Jordan's on Fox constantly. And after using his Fox News throne to try and intimidate Republican House members into voting for Jordan for Speaker, Sean Hannity went on to accuse Hakeem Jeffries and AOC, of course, of intimidating Republicans who voted against Jordan.
Yeah, because that's what they're known for.
Republicans can be frightened by AOC.
Right.
This was hilarious.
Yeah.
But then Jordan lost and lost badly. So Hannity pretty much gave up on him. And as of this writing, over 20 Republicans voted against Jordan on the second House Speaker ballot, which is more than yesterday. Per Wonkette, let's do this every day. This is fun.
It is fun.
Hannity still attacked Jeffries, of course, but he did not name and shame the GOP members who voted against Jordan or urge his viewers to weigh in or continue to attack those resisting a Jordan speakership. Uh-huh. And I want to point out that yesterday there were wives of House members getting text messages from angry Hannity viewers.
Yeah. No.
Why won't your husband vote for Jordan?
Do the right thing.
Why
is your, what's wrong with your husband? Is he a rhino? What's wrong with your husband?
Make him do it. Right. Mm-hmm. But then Hannity hosted, and I cannot emphasize this enough, yesterday hosted Newt Gingrich.
The
polished Newt Gingrich. Mm-hmm. Come on and claim that the House couldn't elect Jordan in 15 votes. And to discuss making Patrick McHenry some sort of bow-tied angry elf temporary speaker, which I'm sure is going to work out just great.
Oh, yeah. It's all going to work. Now that Newt Gingrich is on the case, look, here's the plan. First you got to impeach
strategizing.
Somebody. Then you got to shut the government down, okay? People love that shit.
Impeach Clinton and then shut down the government.
People love that. People love that stuff. Trust me. I've been there. Now, we will have to save my three-hour-long disquisition on David Brooks' new career as a faith-based relationship counselor for some other day. I got a lot of email about, like,
here, look at what David Brooks is taking on now. He wants to heal America or something?
How to see others deeply and be seen by them. How to be emotionally vulnerable to other people. Like, and he's sitting there on CBS. This is his new book.
He's clearly going to marriage counseling with his intern wife.
I don't know what he's doing in this spirit, but I do know that's his book. And of course, because David Brooks has a book, he has to be on CBS promoting it. And every other network will eventually pick him up because he's David Brooks. And he's David Brooks because the Sulzberger family gave him a New York Times platform. And David fucking Gregory pinned him to the top of the heap and said, this is the man beneath
who
which
for all of us.
All, he is the best
he
of
is
us Sella all.
Corridor's priest. Yeah.
And that's it. But I did want to mention that this from Mark Elias made me wonder whether I shouldn't give up show business. Because Mark is the founder. Mark's a good guy. Mark's the founder of the Progressive Democracy Docket, and he's a good egg.
Oh, he's been so great, he's great at overturning all of the Trump lawsuits. Mm-hmm. And he continues to work on suing states that try to restrict voting.
Yeah. No, 100%.
He's a good guy.
And he's busy. I realize he's busy. Yeah. But he thinks, quote, someone should do an analysis of why so many in the media have such a strong psychological need to believe in the existence of a mythical moderate Republican, unquote.
What? Yeah. Why hasn't someone gotten out and done that?
And I sighed a big sigh and I looked to the heavens and I replied meekly, Mark, see the entire liberal blogosphere for the past 20 years.
Yeah. You've only been writing about this for 2 decades. Well, and it's not a psychological need.
No. And it's not me. It's me and you and Digby and Brad.
And everybody. And Atrius, yeah.
Everybody.
He could Google
the entire,
it. He could. It,
go back and look up the news blog by Steve Gilliard, the late.
Google used to have a blog search. Remember that?
I do.
Sad. They got rid of that.
But it's goddamn, man. There are literally tens of millions of words have been spilled by people who you won't see on Meet the Press.
Right.
Or this week, the Joe Stephanopoulos. Or in the New York Times. And you know why? Because they're the problem. Mm-hmm. Those sources are the problem. Those are the ones who are continually looking for the mythical Republican, moderate Republican. Therefore, they're the ones who will never platform anyone who says there ain't no such thing. There hasn't been any such thing for decades. The Republican Party has been a shit show forever. And all
and
the
Newt
people
Gingrich helped to start it. I mean,
oh God, yeah.
To really amplify it. Yeah.
But my humble reply was drowned out by all the usual Twitter flotsam. There were dozens of those sweet summer children who always flock to things like this and ask, yeah, why hasn't anyone ever written about the media's obsession with imaginary Republicans? Golly, why is that? It seems weird to me. And there were scores of someone I'll refer to as Super Patriot MAGA Eagle 2748 type who were bleeding about the liberal media conspiracy is the real threat. And libtards like Mark should be tried for treason. So, you know.
For stopping state Republican legislatures from ending black voting in states.
I don't think these chuckle fucks knew a thing about that.
No,
I think they were just angry.
He's a libtard. That's all they know.
Right. Well, all they know is that he asked the question.
Yeah.
Why are people still looking for these mythical Republican moderates?
You're a libtard. Yes.
Right. Try him for treason. He's a traitor. And there are 600 comments and 400 of them are like that. So
right. No one's going to notice your little yoo-hoo.
By the way, I could give you like 4 million links if you like. And never mind. I know you're busy. But that kind of.
You're busy doing the Lord's work. And we get that. And we're grateful for that. Okay. Let's do a news roundup, Driftglass.
Okay. All right. That's a good idea.
The President Bidening continues.
Yeah.
The situation in Gaza is chaotic and horrible. And for the umpteenth time, we are both very glad that Joe Biden is president of the United States.
We are.
I've been impressed once again with Biden's fearlessness, just going off to Israel. And he was in Ukraine in February. And in less important, but way funnier news than those two trips, his campaign has joined Truth Social just to mess with them.
Yeah.
And they're only following one person so far, and it's Donald Trump.
Keep poking him with a stick.
Talk about being called a libtard. I'm sure.
Yeah.
I'm sure Joe Biden's getting that in spades over at Truth Social, but come on.
Well, and I did, as an aside, see Chris Christie on Morning Joe this morning, which I watched all of 2 minutes, long enough to hear him to say, Joe Biden, the foreign policy, I guess, is fine and it's all good. But, he's still old and he can't talk and he's kind of doddering and he's kind of weak and weakness is bad. When I'm president, I'm very energetic and very. And the only pushback I noticed was Mika Brzezinski raised an eyebrow and said, really? And then Chris Christie said, yeah, really? And then moved on because Chris Christie's a friend of theirs. So they can't very well call him a lying sack of shit on the air. And they got to make sure he comes back. So that's all they can do. When Chris Christie lies, I guess it's okay because they're a friend of the Brzezinski and Scarborough family. So we're just going to move right along. Now, speaking of MSNBC and NBC, the details of the third Republican presidential primary debate were announced this week. And Blue Gal, You know how much we love dueling headlines on this show.
We sure do.
So this was the headline on the NBC News site announcing the third Republican primary debate. Quote, NBC News to host the third Republican presidential primary debate. The debate will be November 8th in Miami, unquote.
And that's all they said.
That's all they said. There was a bunch of stuff beyond that, but that was the headline. Was the headline on the CNN News announcing the same event. Quote, for the GOP debate, NBC partners with right-wing outlets with history of peddling extremist rhetoric, unquote. Yes, yes.
And I couldn't, when we got to this point of the script and we were rehearsing, I was like, NBC partners with why? Uh-huh. Why are they partnering with these right-wing outlets? So the CNN article by Oliver Darcy of Reliable Sources was much more descriptive and informative. Mm-hmm. NBC News is uniting with a pair of strange bedfellows for the third Republican Party primary debate. Quote, now this is important. The Republican National Committee on Monday formally announced that it will partner with the Peacock Network to host the Miami face-off along with the Salem Radio Network and Rumble.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Two right-wing media companies that have a history peddling and profiting off of extremist rhetoric. When I asked NBC News on Monday if the network was actually comfortable collaborating on the third GOP debate with Salem and Rumble, given each company's history, a spokesperson declined comment. But a person familiar with the matter, who could have been the same person,
yeah,
you don't know, it's just whoever is willing to speak off the record, mm-hmm. told me that Charlie Kirk will not be on the stage.
Oh, we're
which
saved.
I guess makes it okay, right?
Sure. Mm-hmm.
And that Hugh Hewitt is likely to be the co-moderator alongside NBC News anchors. He was fired from MSNBC.
Yes, he was. Well, he was. You know, his show was canceled, Blue Gal, yeah. Because
anyway,
who knows
unquote.
Why.
There will be a link to this Oliver Darcy article in our show notes. Please, please check it out for details on just how bad Salem Radio Network and Rumble, you know, that's Kimberly Guilfoyle's
yeah.
and her titties shows hosting platform.
And outright fascist and outright, you know,
calling
neo-Nazis.
For Biden to be executed, you know, the yeah. whole thing, the yeah. whole thing. It's all there. Mm-hmm. They're garbage. And it's not NBC deciding to partner. It's Ronna Romney McDaniel and the RNC saying we have to appeal to these garbage networks and their audiences in order to make people watch.
Yeah. And NBC is saying, okay.
Okay.
Yeah, okay. You know,
we want to be a debate host. So, okay.
And we will not include the link to the NBC article in our show notes, but in it, there is the president of NBC News or NBC saying, well, you know, we have a commitment to discussing the major topics of the day.
Topics of the day.
Bullshit. You know, and it's like, please don't ask me about partnering with the Charlie Kirk Network, the Andrew right. Tate Network, and the Ben Shapiro Network, because I just want ratings. And everything right. sucks now, and we
I
need
money.
I just
want to feel like we're doing something news and election-oriented. Right. Yeah.
It's just, it's all ugly. It's all bad. Now, this is from the Daily Beast.
But Driftglass, one thing, backing up. Sure. But that's the Republican Party now.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Salem Radio Network and Rumble yes. are a huge chunk of what MAGA gloms onto. Mm-hmm. Well, so you just can't let that go. The RNC can't quit that at this point.
Well, if that's the Republican Party, then why don't they fire David Brooks in the New York Times and give it to Ben Shapiro?
I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, Ben Shapiro is a much more representative of what the actual
Ben Shapiro?
Party.
Oh, stop. They yeah. will do it. And New York
will.
Times will have Ben Shapiro columns.
Yes, well, they've already had Tom Cotton, haven't they?
Yeah, well, he's yeah. a senator, so I guess, you know, there's yeah. that discrepancy.
Hey,
but anyway,
you can call a fascist a senator all you want.
All you want. Now, I understand.
This is from the Daily Beast. It's about Representative Dan Crenshaw of Texas. Oh, God. Who confessed? And laughed about it. He told CNN's Jake Tapper that he didn't make much of the chaos enveloping the House GOP conference over the vacant speakership or the GOP efforts to overturn the 2020 election. Ha ha ha. It's just a big joke. Crenshaw, who supports Representative Jim Jordan of Ohio for House Speaker, touted his bona fides on the State of the Union on Sunday, claiming that Jordan has, quote, become part of the solution, not part of the problem. He is a different person altogether than when he was like 10 minutes ago. The statement seemed to mystify Jake Tapper, who noted Jordan had both defied congressional subpoenas and voted not to certify the election results on January 6th. But for Crenshaw, those were less than non-issues, saying several colleagues did both. Quote, if I held that grudge, I wouldn't have any friends in the conference.
All my friends are traitors.
Yeah.
What America.
What am I supposed to do? I'll lose all my friends if I start holding traitors accountable for their treason.
People who tried to get my vice president murdered.
Ha 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 ha. Dan Crenshaw.
That's
again,
just
another
water under the bridge.
Another one of those men of principle who are everybody's looking at Dan Crenshaw. A lot of people bought a lot of stock in Dan Crenshaw being the sensible conservative.
Reasonable Republican.
Sure.
Yep. So as we mentioned earlier, Jim Jordan keeps failing to win the House speakership. Yesterday and today, House Minority Leader Hakeem Jeffries, who will be the next Speaker of the House, the real one.
Yes, he will.
Won 212 votes, which beat every Republican candidate, including Jim Jordan, and got Jeffries a standing O from Democrats. Yeah, you had a really nice GIF up on Twitter from Malcolm X.
No, that wasn't
me. Holding up what?
That wasn't me. I was retweeting that. That was
Really good, that GIF of Malcolm X just holding up his glove and everyone turning.
Yes.
And it's Hakeem Jeffrey leads that conference has leadership skills.
He does.
And as I've said before, has the administrative skills of knowing who to put on committees and knowing how to keep his employees. And this is what it is. It's the HR. That's what House Speaker does all day long. Is HR. Okay, you're going to be in this committee. You're going to be on this committee. You don't like your office? Let me see what I can do. You need new furniture here? Let me see what I can do. And it's a scut job.
Yeah.
But Hakeem Jeffries has those skills. And he's had a lot of help from Nancy Pelosi to get trained in how to manage all of these personalities.
And
how do you manage the squad? How do you manage the blue dogs? How do you make everyone...
You also have to know how to let people off the hook for their votes.
Right.
How to let people not vote when it's too scary to vote and their district is close and we're going to give you a pass on this one, et cetera, and save the seat for the person that I might think is not nearly liberal enough for my taste, but it's one more vote for Hakeem Jeffries for House.
Right.
For
exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Exactly. So, So he should be House Speaker.
Yeah. Obviously.
That's what I'm trying to say.
Moving on, federal judge Tanya Chutkan imposed a narrow gag order on Trump, restricting him from attacking witnesses, prosecutors, and court staff involved in his election subversion case. Quote, this is not about whether I like the language Mr. Trump uses, Judge Chutkan said. This is about language that presents a danger to the administration of justice. His presidential candidacy does not give him carte blanche to vilify public servants who are simply doing their jobs, unquote.
And here's some really good news. The Biden administration reached a settlement with more than 4,000 migrants who were separated from their families at the U.S.-Mexico border by the Trump administration. Under the proposed agreement, the federal government would be prohibited from using a zero-tolerance prosecution policy to separated migrant families crossing the border for 8 years. The settlement would also provide temporary benefits to separated families, such as housing aid, work permits, health care, and allow them to apply for asylum again.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Now, we have a local news story that's also pretty good news. So I know it's amazing. Good news from this podcast. Yes, there's some good news from this podcast. Illinois governor, our governor, J.B. Pritzker, just announced he is launching a national 501c4 called Think Big America that's going to focus on delivering critical swing states to Democrats in 2024 and beyond. That is a major deal considering he is not only a successful Democratic governor, but also one of the largest donors to the Democratic Party in American history. So how will he do it? By focusing on the issues where Democrats are winning in the court of public opinion, namely reproductive rights and other policy positions where Republicans have become more and more authoritarian. Governor Pritzker has already spent tens of millions of dollars against Republicans nationally. This new initiative, strategically set to take on Republicans in the most important states, could help shift the balance of power in 2024.
And think big America embraces his size.
His bigness.
Yes.
He's a big guy. And his big money. And frankly, if I hear one more pundit, one more wise Beltway person talking about the lack of a Democratic bench and who could they possibly run for president and skip entirely over Illinois, which is full of great candidates for higher office.
Absolutely.
I will get up and do an unhappy dance and kick the TV in.
We love our governor.
We do.
And Illinois is a great place to live, guys.
It is. It's a great place to live.
Great place to live. We love it here. Each week, we post to our Facebook page and website an internet kitty sent in by you, the listeners. This week's internet kitty is Mirabelle. In this picture, she is loving the sunny sunspot. Everybody loves the sunny sunspot. Uh-huh. And Mirabelle's human gave us lots of great advice about dealing with diabetic cats, as our Bosco has been recently diagnosed. Drift Glass has found a wonderful way to get the medicine down, though.
Yes.
With tuna juice.
Stern lecturing. No, that doesn't
no,
work.
No, keep let him be hungry all night and then give him tuna juice with a pill mashed into it, right? And of course, Mirabelle eats freshly poured cat food. I'm sure it's the diabetic variety. Our fake sponsor. Whether you serve pet store perfection or dollar store dreck, your pets will sit on the kitchen floor and demand that the food they eat is only freshly poured.
Freshly poured, freshly poured.
You can visit Mirabelle at our Facebook page or website, and you can send your internet kitty, dog, or other pet to us at our email address, proleftpodcast@gmail.com, where you can also write to both of us. Feel free to write us. We do love hearing from you. That email address, proleftpodcast@gmail.com, pops into both of our email boxes, so we both will get it. Be aware that if you write to us at any of our addresses, we reserve the right to read your email or U.S. Postal Service. Go Postal Unions! Letter on the air unless you say otherwise. Don't forget our gourmet coffee guideline. If you can afford to buy an espresso-based beverage for yourself, buy one for us. This is not charity. This is our job. If you can afford and spare $5, please spare $5 a month at patreon.com/proleftpod. Please share our show on social media. And if you love this podcast, please get someone else to listen to. And thank you for doing that. Hey, Driftglass, how are the internet kitties doing this week?
Well, Blue Gal, the internet kitties are well aware that the adult kids arriving in this house are more eager to see them than to see the parents. So suck it, parents.
It's true.
Let's think about living.
Think about living.
Just think about loving.
Think about loving.
Just think about the hooping and the hopping and the popping and the loving, loving, loving. Let's forget about the whining and the crying, the shooting and the dying, and the fellow with the switchblade knife. Let's think about living. Let's think about life.
A Professional Left Podcast is recorded under a Creative Commons license. Copyright 2023 DGBG Productions.